The following is a production of the Washington College of Law at American University.
Hi everyone, thanks for coming. For those of you who don't know, this is the 3L Public Interest Job Search joining session, Public Interest and Government.
I am Claire Raj, I'm in the Office of Career and Professional Development. And the mics aren't working? Okay. And I'm here with Shannon Gomes in the Office of Public Interest, and also we have three distinguished alumni who are with us. We're going to sort of hopefully talk to you about their individual job search tracks and how they were able to find the jobs that they currently have and the ones prior to that as you sort of have moved since you graduated. I'm just going to start by introducing them. We've got sort of a list of questions, but I definitely want you guys to jump in whenever you all have questions as well. There's a handout going around. It's pretty basic. It's just there to give you ideas of as a resource for things like cover letters and interviews and things like that. But I don't think we're actually going to go through it.
Do we want to run through really quickly, though, kind of like timing? And
sure, I'll have Shannon do that. Okay. Our panelists first. Let me just start by introducing them. To Charlene Wright. We have, Danica Sarvaez-Kidd, got the pronunciation right. She is a 2004 grad, and she's currently at U.S. Department of Justice. I know that you've had a job prior to that as well, so she'd be happy to talk to you about all of that. And then we have Cynthia Kaling, who is a 2005 grad. Is that right, Cynthia?
Yeah.
Okay, great. And Cynthia's at a small law firm in Virginia. And then next we have Tanya Asim Cooper. She's a 2002 grad, and she is currently at a nonprofit in D.C. That does predominantly direct legal services, the Children's Law Center. And Charlene, take it away.
Okay. I'm going to do my best to be brief. I just want people to know in general that at this point in your law school career as a 3L or as an enterprising 2L who has come to get the information, looking ahead, you probably noticed that a lot of your classmates have already found postgraduate jobs, and that makes it a little bit stressful. Keep in mind, or a lot stressful, that primarily the folks who do have jobs are going into the private sector or may have found judicial clerkships, and in some cases, although it's actually still pretty early in this process, postgraduate fellowships. But what we want you to know is that the bulk of people who are looking for public sector jobs are not going to start getting them until in the spring, and more likely late spring. So I always tell 3Ls looking for jobs, I won't allow you to really hit the panic button until April comes. And when April comes, then we can talk about the panic plan. But until then, what you need to be doing is keeping your eyes and ears open, using that awful networking tool, primarily through talking to faculty, talking to alums that you know, talking to recent grads who have jobs in fields that you're interested in, attending programs like this and getting to know other alumni. And primarily the thing you want to be doing is informational interviewing. And I don't want to belabor the point because I think everybody probably knows what that means. But start with the contacts that you have from your summer work, your internships, externships, or other even pre-law school experience you had, if you were working in a legal field at that time, get in touch with them, let them know, I'm getting ready to graduate, I'm looking for a job practicing immigration law, or working with children, or working with domestic violence survivors, etc. Send them your resume and say, you know, could we meet for coffee? I'd just like to talk to you about how you got your job, if you know of any job openings, or if you know of other people at other organizations or government agencies that I should be talking to. And you basically just keep going with that process. It seems burdensome. I think it is compared with the mass application process of most of the private sector, but I think it's also infinitely more rewarding because when you do get the job, chances are you're going to make it through personal contacts, which means the job's going to come up and you're going to say, I just talked to somebody at that organization a month ago. I'm going to check in with them before I send in my application, let them know I'm applying, see if it's okay to mention that I talked to them in my cover letter. And if they get 150 applications and the first line of your cover letter is that you have a connection to the organization, you're going to get moved into that pile of definitely needs a second look. And it automatically increases your chances several times over. So that's kind of the process, and I always tell people that you can expect it to take probably somewhere in the ballpark of 6 months for that to pan out into a job, but it definitely works. And so if you're starting to get in that mode where you're more concerned about the rest of your semester and your upcoming exams or things you've got going on in clinic, that's fine, that's understandable. Come January, you really need to start working on your job search. And this is just one way. Again, keep your eye on CareerLink, Idealist, PS LawNet. If you're looking for government jobs, usajobs.com. I'm sure I'm probably missing something, but those are the main things. That's a no-brainer. So that's just my really quick and dirty, because I'd so much rather you hear from our great mom.
And I just wanted to say, in terms of the networking, I feel like this happens at every event. Like, whenever we say the word networking, we have an interesting networking story, which was that Danica, when she first came here, we're killing time because Kiko isn't here, and she mentioned that her friend, who's a former WCA alum, has an interview tomorrow with my husband. And so I get to sort of go home and say, hey, you know, I met someone, and maybe you should really look at this candidate a little more closely. She's a WCA alum, woohoo, and, you know, all that. So it works. So just, you know, always kind of make sure that you have that somewhere in the back of your head, that you should be making connections and talking about what it is that you want to do, so that hopefully you do have that leg up that Charlene was talking about. Okay, so let's just start off by, if we can start with Tanya, I guess, could you just give us a brief description of what your current work consists of?
Sure. Again, my name is Tanya Cooper. I'm a staff attorney at the Children's Law Center. I have been there now for 4 years, and I have what I call a sort of general family law public interest practice. I have practiced for 3 years as a guardian ad litem, an attorney that represents children, and I have represented children in abuse and neglect cases as child witnesses if they have been abused sexually or physically, and they have been called as a witness in a criminal case. I have also represented children as witnesses in domestic violence cases. Now I represent parents in special education cases and housing cases, and right now I have a very interesting custody case. So I have, my practice is primarily litigation. In special education cases, there's a lot of written advocacy, but I appear in court a lot. I have handled several trials. I have also argued motions on appeal before associate judges in Superior Court. And I practiced with Claire for a couple of years at Children's Law Center, and I'm very happy to be here.
My name is Cynthia Keeling. I currently practice family and employment-based immigration law, and I'm definitely a proponent of networking, because in fact my professor, is also, my former professor is now my employer. She teaches a class here, and she'll be here this afternoon teaching immigration law. Essentially, we just do business visas, investor visas, green card cases for a U.S. citizen married before a national, dependent visas for skilled professional. That's it. We don't do any litigation. We don't do any asylum. I kind of have the best of both worlds, because it's just the two of us doing immigration law, but we're housed in a mid-sized firm in Fairfax, Virginia, and my boss is of counsel to that firm, which is a very common arrangement in the immigration world, which I think kind of sets some people off a little bit when they're trying to apply. They don't know that immigration lawyers have this very unique employment situation. But what it means for us is that we have our own portfolio of cases, and we also have a lot of business clients that come from the mid-sized firm. So it's kind of a way for me to have the best of both worlds.
And I just want to say that Cynthia is a networking superstar and knows a lot of alums. She's a great person for you guys to get to know as well.
Okay.
I'm Danica Zarvis-Kidd. I currently work at the Department of Justice. I'm in the Bureau of Justice Assistance. And what I am a policy advisor for adjudication. What that means, my office is the only office, well, primarily the primary office that within DOJ that works with state and locals and not just federal counterparts. So basically what we do is, what I do specifically is kind of decide what initiatives the Department of Justice wants to focus on in dealing with the courts and dealing with the judicial process, anything dealing with judges, prosecutors, defense attorneys, kind of, you know, what the big profile areas are we're going to go into, what we want to spend money on, what we want to develop. I do a lot of work in all areas of the criminal process, so kind of all different kinds of criminal adjudicatory issues I deal with. And before this, I worked at the National District Attorneys Association. I worked in the American Prosecutors Research Institute. I was part of their National Center for Prosecution of Child Abuse. So I worked in prosecuting child abuse for close to 3 years. And that's what I did right after law school, before coming over to Justice. So I have a little bit different path than a lot of people going right out of law school into Justice. I didn't go the honors route. I literally worked my way in. I worked my butt off when I got out of law school and worked my way into DOJ, and I can definitely say it can be done. You don't have to go that traditional route to get in. It's not easy, but it's definitely doable, because once you get out of here, what you make of it is your life and your career, and you don't have to be that top 10% to get a job. I can tell you that right now. So I'd be happy to talk about either of my jobs.
If our panelists can spend a little time talking about whether or not you had your job secured at this point in your 3L year, if not, when and how?
Well, my job process was a saga. I mean, I didn't have the best of grades here, but prior to law school, I had already worked extensively in the Asian American civil rights for about 5 years. So I had a lot of contacts in the area, which helped me a lot, and big supporters of me and big advocates of me. The whole process dates back to me when I was actually applying to this law school. When I was looking at AU, to me it seemed like the perfect fit because of its mission, its culture, its commitment to public service. Also that they were putting people in all areas of law, corporate law, government, public interest, and it was, you know, all in this area. So it just seemed like a natural fit from the get-go. And I always took this approach and attitude about law school and the job process is, what am I going to do in the worst-case scenario? And I felt that this school would give me the most options if I couldn't pursue a public interest career, that I could go into the private sector. What happened with me is that my final year decided that I was going to try to apply through a federal government fellowship, the PMI program. And I got as far as the semifinal stage. I have to say, you know, Career Services was wonderful. They sat down and went through the application, went through the resume, gave me a lot of wonderful feedback. And even though I ultimately wasn't a finalist or I didn't get accepted to the fellowship, I really gained a lot from the feedback and developing a good application for prospective employers. And I also came off as a better candidate and interviewer from that process. So when that sort of fell through, I just started letting everybody in the Sun know that I needed a job. I let them know about the impending debt that was about to hit me pretty hard after the grace period. I let them know what I was interested in. I demonstrated that I really knew about the area of law. And one of the things that I knew that I wanted to do was immigration law. I felt like it was the only area of law that I could be happy with. And, it turned out to be right. But the interesting thing that happened to me, I networked with this professor. Her name is Nancy Lawrence. She teaches family and employment-based law here. And she gave me some tips. She just suggested to me things like, consider taking the Virginia bar, because even though immigration law is federal practice, a lot of the work is in Virginia. Immigration lawyers tend to have small practices. Sometimes they have to do civil issues. And it's nice if you have a Virginia license because they're more likely to take you on than if you had D.C. or Maryland. She suggested people to talk to. I went on Lexis and Westlaw or something, and I cross-referenced immigration lawyers with WCL alumni, and I found a few, one in Tyson's and one in D.C., and I emailed them, and they were like, oh, yeah, I'll take you out to lunch. I'll talk to you about it. And they were saying there are no openings, but I hear of openings, so just let me know what's going on. If you get a job offer, let me know. I'll tell you the person you go to bat. So ultimately, somehow, one of these people put my resume on a listserv, and the attorney just contacted me. A couple was just contacting me, and I went in, and I settled on this one guy. So I had my job before going into bar study, and it came out, went in for my first week, just to set up. This guy, he kind of gave me a bad vibe, but, you know, you're desperate. he arranged time for me to come in to get some training videos for him. I didn't, in his view, know immigration law well enough. So I went in, and he just was very, very erratic. And he was moving things around, and what was supposed to be 10 minutes was turning into an hour. And then I was trying to talk to me, and he was trying to get me to go places with him and around the city. And then finally, his staff took me aside, and she's like, he's drunk. you know, just leave. Like, he's drunk. And then I came back, and I said, oh, I don't know, and I talked to him about this. You know, I decided to let it just, you know, maybe people have issues. I need a job. Then it increasingly got worse. Like I didn't know enough about immigration law, but I knew what he was doing was wrong. I knew he appeared to be applying the far that I knew for benefits that people weren't eligible for, and you know, I would say this isn't right, and he would say, well, you know, I've been practicing law for 30 years, and that's another thing you need to remember. Don't let someone tell you that, because our profession requires that we have ethical, professional responsibility, we have a license. You're going to be working extremely hard this summer to get your license. Don't let someone take it away from you by telling them your experience. So then I was talking to the paralegal, and she was saying she's getting all these bar complaints in the mail. She's getting these threatening calls from clients. And I was out. But so then what did I do? I went back and started telling everyone, the same people that I had been networking with for over the 6 months, and they all felt horrible that this was happening, this was my first foray. And one year,
at what point in the fall was this?
This was September, and my parents were like, but you don't have a job, like, I can't work for this man, I won't have a license, and within a month, I was with this guy. And, you know, he even actually didn't pay me my full wages for the week that I was there, and I was just so glad to be out of the situation. But what had happened was, I contacted Nancy, and I said, this was a complete disaster, and it just turned out that her associate, family decided to move to Colorado, he decided to go with them, and he was leaving, and so she figured, because I spoke Spanish, because we interacted well in class, because of my background, that it would be a good fit, so she just asked me to come in and talk, and within a week I had a job.
I wanted to point out two things. One is that the PMI program that Cintel applied to is now PMF, the Presidential Management Fellowship. For those of you that are interested, we have information in the document library. Applications have not yet been released. It is delayed by the federal government. Release date is mid to late November was the email I got from their office. So, it's still available. We've got a lot of great alums who were PMS, so if you're interested, talk to me.
And we have the highest placement.
Yes.
Of all schools, graduate law school. So
you have it's not just a law school program, it's all graduate school. That was the one thing. The second thing was another important point that Cynthia mentioned was her cross-referencing in Lexis or Westlaw. If you guys have not yet used the career tabs in Lexis and Westlaw to sort of do that type of search and are interested in figuring out how to do it, it's pretty easy to do, but if you need help, any of our counselors, we've all had trainings on it, can take you through the process. You can also contact, if you, for some reason, don't want to set up an appointment with us, you can contact the Westlaw or Lexis rep directly, and they can show you how to do the process, too, and they have trainings on that as well.
Is there anything?
Yeah, one of the reps is an alum, right?
Right.
Is the Westlaw rep an alum?
Westlaw rep
represent yeah, a lot.
Yeah, she is.
I worked with well. Her.
Yeah,
and they're very helpful on that front, too. So it's a great resource to do exactly what Cynthia was talking about.
I was just, I'm sorry to interrupt, but with respect to Westlaw and federal career search, look at the jobs posting tab under which you have access as a student only, because it will expire upon graduation, to lawstudentjobsonline.com, which is a part of a West Thompson affiliation. And that tends to have very good federal postings as well.
Great. Thanks, Linda.
Well, I can say that I didn't have a job at this time in my third year, and it wasn't even until after the bar, I think, that I got my official offer. I actually kind of took a different route because I decided last minute what I wanted to do. I came in thinking I wanted to do international law like so many others, and, you know, did everything international. I kind of was taking a lot of criminal stuff on the side because I was really interested in it. And decided kind of last, you know, my third year that I wanted to go into criminal and not so much international. And so what I did was I took an externship the spring semester of my third year working at the American Prosecutors Research Institute. And actually, I was here representing them this past winter recruiting externs. So,
Can you tell me where that office is located?
Yes, Alexandria. I worked there. And I was the oldest, you know, extern. Everyone else was like, you know, second years, and I was just about to graduate. But it worked out perfectly because I just wanted to get more experience before I graduated, something in criminal. And as it turned out, I knew that there was an opening coming up. So I made sure that I had all my information in. So I got the call. I think I knew it was, you know, I was being considered. I think I interviewed right after the bar, and then I got the job like 2 weeks later. So that's a really good option. I mean, you're in a really unique situation being in D.C. You can do that during the school year. You can get in an extern in a lot of these places that everyone flocks to during the summertime. So if there's an office that you're really interested in, go for it. I mean, go through that directory and, you know, make those contacts and see about getting in the spring. And maybe you'll be top on their list when they're looking, you know, if they've got openings that are coming up. And then, you know, also just that's also how I got my job at DOJ was through my past work in prosecution. I made a lot of contacts, and going back to the networking, I really stayed on some of them because I knew I wanted to be leaving soon and I really wanted to get into DOJ. So I made sure in my past job that all of the things that, and this is a lot that you can do while you're externing, because I took the opportunity to get published while I was externing, and then when I was an attorney, I did a lot of extra work to keep publishing. And that's one thing in the area of public interest I highly recommend, and it makes you marketable to anybody, because there's all kinds of little journals, there's all kinds of, especially in this area, in government and public interest, not just law review articles, but all kinds of journals that want submissions, that are always putting out newsletters and stuff. And I got to be an expert on a topic and published my brains out. And I kept making sure every time it would come out and be reprinted in the sex assault report or wherever, that I sent it to my contacts. Hey, I have this. I just want to make sure you have this. I have this new publication coming out. And that is what got me my job. I'm telling you, I just kept, you know, going that extra mile and kept publishing. So, and it's really easy to do, really easy. So I would recommend that.
How do you, you're on the subject.
Yeah.
How do you find, like, the little journals?
Well, I mean, a lot of them are subject matter oriented. I mean, I came across a lot when I was externing, when I was in, you know, the environment, depending on what area you're in, I mean, there's different, there's so many journals, just tons and tons, and actually a lot of them contacted me putting them out in newsletters because people read these, and they keep reprinting a lot of them, and there's a lot of these, you know, have quarterly reports or monthly, and they are constantly looking for material. So I became an expert on internet luring and child pornography cases, and that's what I kept, and there was a niche for that because I did a lot of the in-depth legal research that nobody else had really done, and it was such a hot topic, people really wanted to keep reprinting my stuff. So I now have a thick portfolio of all these articles that I've published just because I did. I didn't have to for my job, it wasn't a requirement. They encouraged it, but, I mean, that's where you're in a unique. And actually, a lot of our law clerks did that. I actually supervised our law clerk program the last 2 years I was there, and really encouraged them to do that too. And you'd be surprised if you ask wherever you go about these opportunities, about wanting to write, about wanting to publish, they'll be thrilled. So, definitely.
Tanya, do you want to tell us your story?
Well, sure. Wow, that was so inspiring.
Both of them were.
When I came to law school, I did want to do public interest law. My background is in psychology, and I thought for a while I wanted to be a child psychologist. So I came here interested in pursuing that and family law, but then I was very enamored with all my intellectual property classes with Professor Yazzie and Professor Farley, and I took the IP clinic, and I loved it so much that I wanted to do IP work. And that I did wait for an entire year out of law school applying for, there were, at the time, I didn't know if there are public interest intellectual property jobs, and I wanted to hold out for it. So what I did was I did some temporary contract work for large law firms doing document review. And I then I was always interested in public interest law, and my husband inspires me because he is also a public interest lawyer at the Public Defender Service, and he's a great trial lawyer, and I enjoy watching him in court. And so I talked to, he was at DLA Piper with the Goldberg Public Defender Service, and I met with a partner at DLA Piper who heads up their pro bono work and the pro bono project, and he looked at my resume and he said, all of your background is in family law matters and with public interest focus, you should really consider the Children's Law Center. I know the executive director there, Jude Sandlow, and by the way, they have an opening, you may like the work. And 2 weeks later, I had the job at the Children's Law Center, and I loved it. I stayed there for 4 years now and worked in several different projects. So I think that you should explore your interest in law school, and you should also talk to as many people as you can you come across in terms of networking. Ask them to take a look at your resume, and maybe they'll give you a fresh perspective on what they see, and they may also know of opportunities. I thought Danica's point about the publishing is very important because I participated here at WCL on the Journal for Gender and Public Policy in the Law, and that really helped my writing so that now when I practice and I do a lot of motions writing and a lot of review motions in the appellate process, my motions stand out from opposing counsel who doesn't take the time to sometimes even spell check, but make sure their sites are right and that their legal research is current. And that is important because if you do decide you want to go into litigation, you really want the judges to trust your work. You want them to follow your recommendations and grant your motions. And if you're writing better motions than opposing counsel, your job is a lot easier when you go into court and have to stand up and advocate for your client. So that's my story.
And I just want to tack on to that. We also have two other alums who work at the Children's Law Center, Pooja Mehta and Rebecca Goldfrank. And we have an alum who is the pro bono partner at DLA Piper here in Washington, D.C., Lisa Dewey. So connections.
And that reminds me, actually, that both the partner at DLA Piper that I spoke with, Sheldon Krantz and Lisa Dewey, when they suggested that I apply to the Children's Law Center, they also told me to use their name. And so my very first sentence, you know, of my cover letter was that, you know, Sheldon and Lisa suggested that I contact you about this opening. And it really made a difference because, you know, 1 week later I had the interview and then the following week I had the job.
Switching gears just slightly, sort of from the employer hat, what do you guys feel, how do you feel about what makes an entry-level attorney stand out when you're sort of starting to review all of their resumes? And we can start with Cynthia. Or
I think
myself, that's a lot of people I'm not contacting about immigration jobs, and I look at what they have on it. For immigration law, pro bono makes a difference. If you can get as much experience in that area of law. I know it's hard. It's one of those things where they send me the resume and they find that I'm just redoing the whole thing. Because it just depends on the person. The things that they think that matter typically doesn't matter. But I think if you're interested in one area of law, it's really good to circulate it among the attorneys that are in that field.
Well, I did all the hiring for my last job of law clerks and new attorneys, so I can definitely speak on this issue. You would be surprised how many both law clerks and new attorneys just send out just mass mailers, or maybe just kind of tweak things a little bit to fit with your organization, change around a few things, but you can tell that it's so not tailored to your, what you're looking for. And I would just say, I don't care. I mean, I got to this point where I would say, I don't care if they make it up. I don't even care if it's true. But give me something in your cover letter, especially, that why you want to work here. Why does this? And a lot of them you can tell, well, they were qualified, but it doesn't seem like they really want to be here. They didn't give me any reason why they want to be in our office doing what we do. Do a little bit. It's worth doing a little bit of homework on. Like, go to the website. See what exactly they do. What exactly about that interests you. And if nothing, make something up. I know it's horrible, but it works. I mean, you just want to make a connection that you've done your homework and impress me by that you know what we do and that you want to do that too. That alone makes you stand out among so many others. I can't even tell you. And then, obviously, I mean, your resume, as much as you can, obviously tailor it to where it is you're applying to. But the other thing, I know that this... people have different opinions on this, but the attorneys that I, worked with, that I did a lot of these reviews with, they really don't like a lot of the extraneous information, like, I like to jog and swim and what your hobbies and cook, and that kind of stuff actually made us dismiss people. Like, they, that's great, you're an attorney, we don't care what you like to do in your, it sounds horrible, but it was true. I saw these people laugh at them and toss them aside because they just didn't appear as serious or as, take that with a grain of salt. You'll hear different things on that about whether or not you want to include a sort of personal, it's different if you know that you're going to be interviewing with somebody who shares a specific, interest or something. That's a different story. But in general, I would say, from my perspective, I would leave that kind of stuff off.
But having said that, that kind of thing is valued at the mid-sized firm where I want to house in, because they have a lot of runners. They like to know that you two are active. If you're interested in sports, they love waiters because they like people who put themselves through school and that kind of thing. So,
well, I'm glad you guys both talked about these things, because these are things that we talk about in counseling all the time, and I think sometimes it's always better to hear it from somebody who's been on the employer side than hear it from us. But, we're constantly telling students, particularly with the nonprofits, but also with the government agencies, go to the website. If they have a newsletter, read the newsletter. Speak to, if you're applying for a particular section, because it's a big organization, speak to the projects that are on the website. And, if the mission doesn't interest you and the projects they're working on the website doesn't interest you, then chances are you're not a good candidate, and don't waste your time and don't waste their time. The other trick I use is that if people get stuck in the cover letter, read the organization's mission statement and speak to that in your opening paragraph without restating it. Speak to that as to why your background and your goals are a good fit for kind of like their overarching mission. And that just kind of helps get the ball rolling in with the rest of the cover letter. But I also want to ask the panelists, and this may be different between the government and the nonprofit, but students are constantly fretting about this. Two-page resume, okay, if it's relevant?
Okay.
Yeah, totally.
But I talked to this friend who's on the hiring committee for ICE. She said they hate it if you go over to one page. It just drives them nuts.
They hate it if you
don't go over one page.
Two pages is fine.
Right, you don't just want to fill it up. But
yeah.
But what we see all the time is, you know, students come in and you've got no margins and 8-point fonts, it's like,
no, that's not
A, right. Did you take stuff off so that you could make it stay on one page? And B, nobody can resist as it's laid out, so you need to go back to your 11 or 12-point font and get on the two pages. And then somewhere they'll say, I was told my first year not to go beyond one page. And, you know, the answer is always, it depends. If you're looking at a public sector job, particularly a law firm, probably not. All they care is what you did since you started law school. But for public sector, usually you don't want to go beyond two pages unless you have a PhD and lots of publications, but two pages?
Yeah. I definitely wouldn't go beyond two pages, but that's just another reason why the network, because if you talk to these people, they'll just tell you. My friend was telling me she got the job, and she was saying that they get annoyed because they always submit their resumes on the federal resume format. But I'm like, it's required on the announcement. She said, I know, but we hate it. And she said the way to do it is that they're all hiring their friends, and they're all advocating for their friends. So as many people as you can meet that do that one area of law and work in that one division, they keep pushing their friends, their contacts. So that's why it's important to first do due diligence and talking to people who work in that area of law, and then choose between the one page versus the two page. But generally speaking, I think two pages are okay. That's just, she was vehement about that.
I would just add to, I know I learned this when I was here, but handwritten thank you notes are worth their weight in gold. The only thing I would say is if you're applying to somewhere federal, do not mail them, because they have to go through a processing center because of the whole anthrax thing. It takes me months to get mail. So, and I made this mistake too when I was applying. I think that my thank you notes arrived to my interviewers like a month after I started.
It was email?
Embarrassing. Well, email is good, but I would actually say, go hand walk them down and give them to the receptionist. Just hand them and say, this is for so-and-so. And that they'll accept that. And I definitely would recommend that. Just taking them down to wherever the office was that you went. And even if it's just to the guard inside, depending on what federal office or whatever, just saying, this is for so-and-so. You know, I have the address on there, but then it won't go. Well, that was a mistake that I made. So.
And how does that prevent anthrax?
The mail, it's just kidding. If you mail it.
Yeah.
It
I'm so glad we solved that mystery and how that whole anthrax thing happened.
Well, we started a little late, so I wanted to open it up to your questions. So
oh, just a follow-up to that. Will they accept them at federal buildings at the front?
Yeah,
okay.
We do.
Okay.
How you can. Facts, I don't trust getting any facts. I think that you really can't replace a handwritten thank you note from someone who received them from people that I was hiring, but then also, you know, from
provided
what I heard.
You have legible handwriting.
And I always ask, I always ask whatever contact, whatever I was applying for, especially for DOJ, is that appropriate? And everybody always resoundingly always says yes. And you'd be surprised how many people don't do it, especially it's just a really nice catch, I think. It's always worked out so well for me, and people always appreciate it. So, and I learned that here, I think, my first year, and I tell everybody to do it.
Yes.
Did any of you consider applying for a public interest fellowship?
I wish I had. I wish I had thought of it at the time, because there are some good ones, the Equal Justice Work and SCADDIN, and it's a good way to get into a public interest organization that's very competitive. I know the Children's Law Center, their application process has gotten very competitive, and they only hire, you know, a class of six staff attorneys every year. So
they do have a fellow almost every year.
Almost every year, exactly. So that's a very good way to get into a public interest organization. It's something you should consider. And usually their fairs are pretty good too. I remember going to the Maple Fair.
That was
because
good.
I think that
yeah.
I'm so happy because I worked there, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Dinner, which was great.
Yeah. Interesting.
But if you are interested in fellowships, the place to look.
Oh, actually, my question was more if they considered applying, and the fact that they didn't apply, I was just wondering if you did apply, did it go okay, and if you didn't apply, like why you chose not to apply. That.
I think I applied and stopped the process midstream, but I do think it's. For the fellowship, especially here, it's really important you coordinate with Charlene's office, and then also find out who has connections in the law school with the fellowship, like if any of the faculty or previous fellows, because it's a mistake. If they get an application from this law school, you didn't talk to anyone, and they start talking to the people that they
know the program and asking about you, and that, and you know, a professor says, I don't know if this person hurt you. But you made me think of something when you asked about that, the whole point about debt. That's a great way to leverage up your salary. One thing that you should think about when you do your interviews and talk to people, not in government, but certainly private sector and some of the nonprofits, I don't think they really, in fact, I know they don't know the way the debt have gone up. And so one of the things you should be doing now is get a handle and a figure on what your debt is, because God forbid you get that job offer and you hadn't thought about it and you put yourself in a position that you are struggling to make your loan repayments, when you can simply just say, this is what it is, this is why I need this, this is my salary requirements, and you'd be surprised how much leverage you have with that.
I totally respect what you're saying, but I have to completely 100% disagree. I started out making $36,000 a year and knowing that that's the starting salary in a lot of nonprofits where I was, and prosecutors too across the country, and knowing, and I worked very closely with Sheila, who was mm-hmm. her predecessor. She encouraged me, like, a lot of people take these really low-paying jobs for short periods of time. It's a great way to get experience. Don't worry about it. WCL offers a lot of services to really low-paying public interest jobs. Don't worry. Don't not take a job because of the salary. And when you're working in the nonprofit sector, a lot of times that's all they can offer you. And they're all attorneys, and it's that or nothing. And I took it, and I don't regret it. Now, granted, I also worked my way up pretty fast. I think I was, I'll be perfectly honest. A lot of what I was doing in publishing, especially, I was able to really make myself stand out, and I got promoted very fast, and that worked out very well. And that can work out really well for you too. If you are going to the government later, you can negotiate. You'd be starting out potentially at a much lower salary if you go straight from law school, but if you go somewhere else first, I'm actually in a better position than some of my friends who went straight to the government, straight out of law school. It actually ended up working out much better for me, although I started much lower. Sometimes, and that's the thing, I went into forbearance with my loans. There's so many options. I would just say, if you're going public interest, don't weed anything out because of salary. I was in forbearance with my private loans. You're not penalized for it. I think it was for a year or whatever it was after I consolidated. I mean, there's so many, there's a lot of options, especially in public, and especially, they're really good here at working with you. That all the other attorneys I've worked with from other law schools were so jealous that I came from here and had so much help, and that's why I'm here talking to you, because I want to give back as well. So make use of everybody here, and I would say not to say no to something just because of the salary.
I think you both make great points, and I think it comes back to just keep talking to people so that if you do get an offer but you feel like you've got all of these other financial obligations in addition to your debt, and that really is a factor. If you know an alum or you know somebody else who works in the organization you have an offer from, or you can come and talk to Claire, you can come and talk to me, you can come and talk to Matthew, who's our alumni counselor, who's excellent in all hiring sectors. And just kind of talk through whether or not you want to ask for more money than what they've offered you. And, we've worked with so many people over the years that we may know, this organization, we know that they just can't do it. But other places may have more flexibility. And I think it doesn't, once they've made an offer to you, it doesn't hurt to ask. All they can say is, I'm sorry, we're not able to do that. It's this salary or it's nothing. It's really, once they've kind of picked you, it's not going to be a strike against you to try and negotiate. So.
Just advised an alumnus yesterday who upped his starting salary with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission by $9,000, having negotiated his entry-level salary upwards. You can do it, depending on your background.
And, some organizations do, they either have labor union contracts or they have very strict hiring schedules and salary grades, and there really isn't much of any flexibility within that. But again, I don't think it hurts to ask, and especially if you've talked it through with, a career advisor who can really give you advice on the best ways to approach the employer.
We have another question, I think, from the back.
Thank you guys so much for coming. It's been really helpful. One question I had in terms of networking, how do you make it so it doesn't seem like so tacky that you're just going to like knock on someone's door for a job? Like, it's something that I'm open to doing, but I don't know how to start the conversation in a way that isn't like me focused about how can you help me find a job.
Be clear that when you initially make contact, be clear that only for informational purposes. Be clear you're just investigating there as well. Be clear that you're looking. People love to talk about themselves. And be clear that's going to be the purpose of the meeting, that you don't have an expectation that they'll have a job. Sometimes people come to our office for informational interviews, and we tell them there's no openings, but they walk away disappointed, and they're clear they were expecting a job. And that's the awkward feeling that people don't like. But
can I ask, have you all in your professional experience received calls from WCL students or other students? And have you, and you're all have sort of had informational interviews or open to it? So what are the best ways that you've seen people reach out to you? Like, what do they say in their emails, for instance?
I need a job.
You can really help me. I'm interested in Children's Law Center. I'm interested in that type of work. That's fine. I'm happy to talk to anybody.
Yeah, and I like the ones who especially, I mean, you just say, I'd love to get a cup of coffee in a year about your job or something like that. But, and it helps if you, and just be upfront about, listen, this, I saw your name either in this directory or just however you made that contact. And I would just say, I know it does feel, it is awkward, but I think if you can just call it what it is and say, listen, I really like, your job sounds really neat. I'd love to hear more about what you do. I'm trying to figure out what I want to do. And I think you could spare, a half an hour for it and have a cup of coffee with me. And that's,
and it's really enough to say, I'm a third-year law student. They know.
Yeah.
The other thing about it is sort of when you're in law school, you're not getting these, or some of you might be, from students that are interested in WCL, but you're not getting these emails. But as soon as you start practicing, you'll get them. And so it's like this whole world that's happening, and you're not engaged in it yet. But once you are engaged in it, it's not an awkward thing. Like, Tanya's not going to look at your email and be like, I don't know this person. She gets a lot of this, and she, can respond to them when she has the time.
Yeah, I was going to say, within your first year of practice, I'm sure you will get requests from either WCL folks or folks who are friends of people you know who just want to talk to you about what you do and how you got it. And so people in the nice thing about public sector legal employment is, although there's no real hiring schedule for most of it, people are really open and really encouraging. And really willing to set aside time to meet and talk to you. They know how hard it is to get a job. They know how important the contacts are. And sometimes if they can't squeeze in coffee, they'll talk to you on the phone for 20 minutes, while they're having lunch or whatever. But people really are invested in getting more people in the field. So try not to feel like it's so awkward, because it's really just a common practice.
Think of it this way. You may be filling a void that they need to fill. They're also getting all these announcements and writing books to their colleagues and contacts and matching people.
Mm-hmm.
So you may be filling that void yourself, making that contact. And if you contact five people and only meet with two people, that's something.
I know that a lot of you have class and we're only have the room for one, so I wanted to wrap up. And I think our panelists have business cards, and I certainly have their contact information, so if you would like to speak to them further, you can come down and chat right now, or let me know. Oh, also, we have a program, Art of Networking.
When is it?
November.
The Art of Networking is coming up. Look for it.
Second. Look on CareerLink, the events section, if you want to sort of learn more about it.
Speaking of it, how about an applause?